Well, good morning, Jackie.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
You know, can't complain. Can't complain. I'm excited for this chat. Ray and I chat privately from time to time and in the groups and all, but we thought it'd be fun to start a new series, you know, get some new perspectives clashing, not clashing, but, you know, different mix of co-hosts, spice things up a little bit. And yeah, we always have a lot of fun in our conversations. So thought might as well.
We're going to find out, eh? Yeah, no assumptions, no assumptions. What's fun about this is we still don't know what to call it. So as of right now, it's not being called anything. If our listener would like to suggest a title, please do. We would love to hear from you. You can leave it in the comments section on YouTube after this has been published, or you can leave it on our Discord, or you can leave it on our Patreon. We don't know what to call this. We're thinking Dualistic Unity Random, Dualistic Unity Rambles, Dualistic Unity We Don't Know. Could be anything. You let us know. We've had a couple of suggestions on Patreon already, and a shout out to our Patreon supporters because they're fucking awesome. But yeah, we were just laughing a little bit about how something off the cuff, because that's all these Church of Guillotine photos were, was just a joke that we made on Think Sunday or something like that. We just were just like, wouldn't it be funny if, or it might have been last week. And so I made a bunch of photos with AI and I released it. And right now they're almost at they passed 750,000 views on TikTok this morning. And it's crazy because, and it's funny because my daughter commented on this, because on Instagram, it blew up too, got a good amount of views, but it was all Christian hate, right? Whereas TikTok seems to be people going, yeah, that is weird, and laughing. And my daughter commented on the fact that TikTok is a younger demographic. I thought that was interesting. I was wondering what you thought.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking as well. I'm not sure why that is. I guess because TikTok kind of has a stigma of being like not a serious app or something. But yeah, for people my age, like TikTok is more ingrained in like the culture and like, you know, how people like pass around memes and stuff. It's all TikToks these days. So yeah, and I've seen a lot of people dig on religion on TikTok and get away with it. And it's kind of like more so the norm to see people doing that. So it doesn't surprise me that people are laughing at that. And, you know, it was a really playful, I think, like TikTok, like it is just pointing out the cross was a fucking torture device and Jesus wasn't the only one who was nailed to one, you know, so it could have very easily been a different torture device, maybe a guillotine, maybe something else, you know? And it's weird that it's just become so normalized as a symbol of like purity and peace. just because of like Christianity being so ingrained in our culture. And it's seen as so disrespectful to criticize it in the slightest, which is a huge red flag. Like if the religion you're following isn't open to criticism at all, that's basically a guaranteed assurance that they're trying to manipulate you in some way, or keep you from realizing a truth that is glaringly obvious. And I think that's very much the case with Christians, and the people on Instagram are, you know, falling into that still. But it is hilarious when you don't really know or really care what the response is going to be. You just get to watch people like make what they will of it. And you never know what that's going to be.
That's the thing. It's just a conversation starter, right? Like that's really all it is. It's like, hey, have you considered? But it's fascinating just the number of responses that have been like, yeah, the guillotine didn't exist back then. It's like, I'm aware of that. You know, like, I think we're all aware of that, you know, but the point is that, you know, it is a torture device. On the other hand, there's been the flip side response, which is people suggesting way worse alternatives, like way worse alternatives. Some people have been like, you know, yeah, how about autoerotic asphyxiation? Oh yeah, no, that was straight up in there. Somebody's like, how about congestive heart failure, which has got I think over 1,500 likes on that comment alone. Just all kinds of stuff. But I liked the guillotine because it's appropriately, well, it's direct. It says right on it what it's for. Like, it's very, it's a big head chopping machine. That's what it is. That's it's pretty much right there. Whereas something like the Iron Maiden or the electric chair or lethal injection, this is something I was also given as a suggestion, just didn't have that comic sense. Like, it just wasn't quite so in your face. Like, wow, that's fucking ridiculous. Somebody did say, though, in that church, circumcisions would be a lot easier. Because you got all these tiny little guillotines. I was like, that is a really good point. You know, at least it's functional.
Yeah, we need to create a patent for the mini guillotine, sell it to the medical industry. There you go. Make things easier for you guys.
Works on cigars.
Really? Interesting. Yeah,
that's what you do with a cigar. You got a little thing that you put on the end of the cigar and you snip the end off so you can smoke it, right?
Oh, I've never smoked a cigar, but oh,
shit, we'll have to do that next time we hang out.
I'll be real fancy with it.
Right.
I need a monocle as well.
And a little glass of cognac.
Yeah, it has to be some cocktail, no ice, just the most bitter fucking thing you've ever tasted in your life. But yeah, I think the guillotine was appropriately chosen. It's also like the same size, you know, like it's like the same general shape as the cross, you know? So I feel like that's why it works best. Oh, it's just like a very obvious, like slight tweak that makes all the difference. Because everyone's association with guillotine is like the French Revolution.
Yeah, exactly. Some people have actually said that. It feels so French, which I appreciate. But I encourage you to go and check out some of the defenses for the cross. I'm not kidding. There are Christians going, no, God chose the design because it symbolizes two roads coming together and these things on all four points and just a bunch of shit. They're just like, nope, it was perfect. It was perfect. It was prophesied in the Old Testament, blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, oh, man. And so I said, yeah, you know, Romans found it super functional, too, for like hundreds of years before Jesus came along and afterwards. But could you imagine if Jesus was eaten by a lion? That was pretty typical back in the day. If Jesus had been brought back to Rome and thrown in the Colosseum, that's exactly what would have happened.
Damn, people used to be really fucking brutal, like insane. The fact that people would go to a public space to watch somebody else get eaten by a lion or fight to the death eating popcorn, like we're so desensitized or extra sensitive these days, I would say. Like we just aren't exposed. Well, I guess they used to see people dying a lot more. Just in general from natural causes or in battle or some shit or, you know, from public stonings or fucking, yeah, like gladiator fights and shit. And yeah, today, like that's so removed and
you got the UFC now.
Yeah. But they can't actually like really hurt each other, right? Or can they?
Oh yeah. There's a number of people who get really hurt. There was one fighter recently who got, it doesn't take much. He just got kicked in the back of the head and he's never going to speak or walk again.
Yeah. That's interesting. Do you think people just have like why is it that we white like to watch violence? Because we have those impulses ourselves?
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty primal thing. Right? Of course we do. I mean, you can feel it every time you're enraged and you actually have violent thoughts. Like your brain has that mechanism in there for sure. And, you know, and we don't exercise self-honesty and we don't exercise, you know, a great deal in terms of self-awareness. And so it's not really something that we ever come to terms with, right? Or at least if we do, it's later on in life after we've gotten out all of our aggressive tendencies and whatnot. But yeah, no, it's a serious draw. You know, bloodlust has always been a serious draw.
Yeah, humans are just kind of messed up and weird.
It's the power.
And yet, perfect at the same time, because until we step in and judge it and say violence is bad, because individual people are the priority. Like, and I'm not saying violence is good by any means, but it just is, you know, it's a fact of the reality that we're living in. And maybe it is a step in the right direction that we're not publicly watching people being executed. That's definitely a step in the right direction, I would say. Or at least towards a recognition that, you know, that person is also you. They're not just like some random person that you can jeer at and believe is separate from you. So you have a little bit of empathy. You're like, okay, well, what if that was me getting eaten by the lion? So yeah, but I don't know. That's an interesting thing. Like, coming back to the conversation of like wrong and right, it just, and that in religious circles is something that's very, they feel like is clearly defined. They know what's right. They know what's wrong. And if people are wrong, they don't really have to have empathy for them anymore. Cause they're like, no, you're on the wrong team. It's like, no, my book says this, so I'm going to kill you, which is so absurd. It's so fucking absurd when you take 2 seconds to think about it. But it's funny, like when I was Christian, I totally had an ego about that. I totally had an ego and thought I was correct in believing that. And I was super validated by it because it made me feel like a good person. And so that's been something I've actually like had to consciously let go of, is the attachment to being good. And it still very much, I feel like, limits me in the way that I'm willing to express myself, because I just, for some reason, well, I know the reason. The reason is because I'm afraid of people's judgment. But then when you see through that for what it is, and you see, okay, they're only judging you based on how they need to see themselves, and they're just uncertain about everything just as you are, like that judgment doesn't really hit the same. Like, it can't actually touch you if you're not giving it weight. So yeah, but I think all, like a lot of people, they're gonna claim that they're a good person, and I've just recently realized like how much that's blinded me from all the ways that I haven't been good, and I've been cruel and self-involved and selfish and egotistical, quite honestly. But I think most people, if you ask them, like, are you a good person, they'll say yes. And that's concerning.
Yeah, but what happens to bad people, right? In every story we have, in almost every movie, cartoon, children's book, what happens to bad people? They get shunned, they get defeated, they get ostracized, they become isolated and alone and angry and bitter. And so just out of a defense mechanism, just wanting to fit in, to protect yourself, to not be alone and isolated and in danger, you start to look at yourself as a good person, because that's obviously the side you want to be on. Right? And it's just a natural thing we fall into. I wanted to mention very quickly that the last public hanging in the US was in 1936. So it really wasn't that long ago that we were still doing public executions. And so just wanted to mention that, you know, less than 100 years ago. So expect them to be coming back at some point. The pendulum swings. But you see, now right there, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, that was damn funny to me. A lot of people would be like, why the fuck are you laughing at that? I wouldn't be able to laugh at that if I was worried about those stupid people. Like, I wouldn't in any way be able to enjoy whatever the fuck my brain just did if I was worrying about those people and their opinions of me based on how they need to feel like they're good people because they don't have certain thoughts. Having certain thoughts does not define you as a person. And that's it. Doesn't define you as a person. You know, this is why the idea of being a good person or a bad person is horseshit. Like, it doesn't make sense. It's an arbitrary concept that we've just created. We've just created it. And it's like, well, what's good? Well, the things I like. And what's bad? Well, the things I don't like and don't understand. It's like, well, hold on. That seems really fucking stupid. Right? And so what is the measure? I think it's empathy. I think it's really just empathy and clarity, not compassion, because that's not the same thing. Compassion's about you. But I think it really is like, how much attention are you putting into all the considerations in each moment you're in, right? And I think that's what determines the outcome. And then later on, people are like, that was a good outcome. It's like, it wasn't about being good, though. It was about considering everyone involved without being selfish. So that's not good, but it certainly has the superficial appearance of being good. It's just attention. It's just awareness in action, right? But we like the idea of being good people. It's super tempting, right? It's super tempting. And that's why, you know, in an argument, we're like, I'm the right one. It's like, hold on. They feel like the same thing. They feel exactly the same thing, that they're right. You know, and why? Because we both want to feel like we're, you know, on the right side, that we're the good one, that we're the fucking, you know, righteous one, that we have, you know, the clearer perspective. When in fact, if you could get rid of the argument, that would be, you know, the best thing you could do. We just let it go entirely, let go of the conflict, you know, but you can't do that if you need to be good, because there must be an evil. You can't be good if there's no evil.
Yeah. And then in that conversation, nobody's actually listening to each other. They're just listening for what they need to hear to confirm their existing belief. But that's a huge thing in psychology, like confirmation bias. We build these beliefs and then we filter the things that we perceive, and we'll block out things that like don't or take away from what we already believe, and we'll just keep taking in things that confirm it. And also, like, we have a tendency of preferring things that we're more familiar with. And I think that's, you know, evolutionarily, that was like the safer choice, right? Because you can't just, I don't know, you never know people's intentions. And if you're focused on survival, you know, sticking to what you know is the safe option. But, you know, in today's world where it's not that dire, you know, of a situation, and like we're not really faced with life-threatening situations every day and like battles that we need to fight and, you know, predators coming into our environment, we're kind of just becoming more and more hard-headed. And when you think of it like cells in a body, which is, I love to bring it back to this example because it just very clearly demonstrates how absurd like being self-serving is, or like thinking that you're above somebody else. Like if a cell was like, yeah, I'm right and all these other cells are wrong, and it stopped like working with the other cells in its environment and just started producing more of itself, that's cancer, right? And I think that's kind of what's happening societally, is that we have these cancers of like ego and identification and different groups that we are segregating ourselves into and looking at each other like the other one's the problem, when in reality the problem is the conflict. You know, like feeling that one person existing and not agreeing with you is a threat to you existing and going about your day, which it wouldn't, you know, except that we're selfish and now we're fighting over land and resources, and it becomes easy to dehumanize the people that you see as inherently bad or wrong or stupid in some way. Like, and it's made even worse too, I think, with the echo chamber of the internet, because that's just going to feed you what you already are interacting with, what you're already subscribing to, so that you stay scrolling on whatever platform it is. And everybody's in their completely unique echo chamber of the internet. And we're just getting further and further away from being able to just fucking have a conversation as two people, like on even playing ground without any of the bullshit where like both people's intentions and thoughts are taken equally. And, you know, maybe that's kind of idealistic, but I think we can get there. You know, I've seen it in myself, the way I've let go of a lot of my conflict and judgment. And it's made it so much easier for me to connect with people that otherwise I would not talk to or judge, you know, if I'm being completely honest. And it doesn't happen overnight, but that's okay. Like, we're not in any rush. But, you know, it's beneficial to both the individual and the collective to stop taking yourself so goddamn seriously and thinking you're right all the time.
It's really interesting, right? Like what you were saying about how our life has changed. Like at one point we were out in nature and we were vulnerable. And that was, you know, kind of the thing to worry about was that very clear and present danger of being hunted or you know, being pummeled by the elements or anything like that. And so there was a lot of stuff to deal with right then and there. And then suddenly we got kind of this sense of control and we started to build comfort, but we never really got rid of the fear. You know, it's kind of like the fear built in the background. And so now we're in this comfortable bubble, but because of our fear, because of our inability to work together, we cut corners, we try to be better than one another, we do all that. And so, well, you know, that clear and present, you know, death isn't there anymore. Now it's kind of like an encroaching death, where it's like the lack of meaning, the lack of motivation inside, but there's also fucking everything from diabetes to fucking cancer that's growing also internally, more than it ever has in human history, right? Because of all the shit that we're doing to our water and our air and our food and fucking everything else. And it's all, again, out of fear. You know, our entire economy is fear-based, you know, to the point where there's a fear index. Like, there's a fear index on Wall Street. They actually measure people's fear just so that way they can see who wants to buy and sell. This is actually an investor's tool, is to check the fear index. Because a lot of our economy is based on that compulsion. I must have it. Oh God, I'm going to lose it. I need to sell it now. Like, it's all just reactions. And that's what people do. This is why the rich people, or generational wealth especially, tends to be there, because they just sit it out. Right? Like, they just wait out all of these, you know, giant recessions and whatnot while everybody else panics. And then later on, they profit from it, which is why, again, a lot of rich families will end up buying out other companies when they tank, because everybody's panicking.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, it's shifted to being like a background fear, sense of unease, because we don't actually have the security that it looks like we have or we want to feel like we have. Because you're right, like, you could just have a heart attack, you know, and we're very aware of that. Like, we are very aware that anything could happen. But at the same time, we want to believe so hard that we can do something to protect ourselves through, you know, the way that we view ourselves, or physically in the way that we hoard resources. We're like, oh, yeah, if we just get more money. If we get more money, we'll be more likely to survive. And although in some ways that's true, like once your basic needs are met, I feel like after that, the more money you have, it's almost like a threat to your life, to be honest, because then it's like, you know, you have everything you could possibly want and you feel like you should have control and you still don't. And then you think it's something wrong with you, and then you can kind of like turn on yourself. And that's why I see a lot of, you know, celebrities who are struggling with addiction and overdosing. You know, they're on top of the world and they still don't see value in themselves, and then they just think there's no hope. But it's because they're looking in the wrong place, you know? It's they're looking for the external validation of their, I don't know, their like achievement or of their worthiness. And it really can only ever come from inside. Like, it has to be a change in priority from looking good on paper and being rich and being a successful, whatever, business owner or, you know, something worthy of respect. versus just being a human, just like anybody else. And you can kind of take the pressure off in that way. But that comes with recognizing that, like, all the systems of value that you've used to build yourself up for your whole life, make yourself feel better, you know, that's not the way. And that transition is not easy, though. That shifting of priorities is not easy because there's a lot of, like, habitual feelings and a lot of habitual behaviors that we built just learning how to cope with existence, you know, that we have to, you know, kind of sort through and let go of. And there is a, for me, I've experienced a lack of motivation just because the carrot and the stick, you know, I realize that I've seen those for what they are, you know, it's never the next thing. It's never the next job or promotion or thing that you do, relationship you get in. And it's not, you know, worthwhile to just constantly run away in fear from all these consequences that could happen, you know, judgment, failure, because you can always get back on your feet. So at the end of the day, it's just prioritizing the present moment and how are you doing? Like just tuning in and starting to listen to yourself, but that's a messy process and it's not simple and nobody can tell you how to do it for yourself. And that's, I think, where people run away, but all that effort is worthwhile for sure. And it's like effort in a counterproductive way, because it's like effortful to let go of your effort that you used to put into maintaining your identity. You know, it's just like, what do I do with all this energy? And it's confusing for a bit, but we can find different ways to express without, you know, having an expectation.
Absolutely. And not just individually, but collectively. I think that's the point, is that we have these, I guess, cycles that we go through, and it's happened repeatedly through history, where if we don't deal with the lessons that you're talking about individually, if we don't go, why am I chasing all this money? It's not actually going to make me more of a person. And if we don't do that, where does the money come from? Other people. It comes from other people and their livelihoods, and which is why we have such a huge imbalance between rich and poor. And we have such a huge imbalance between rich and poor right now because the individuals aren't dealing with that shit that you're talking about right there. So what I find really funny is that if that goes on long enough, eventually you have some stupid fucker who says something dumb like, hey, let them eat cake, when they're like, everyone's starving. And all those poor people get real fucking mad. And suddenly there's a revolution. And they start eating the rich, right? And it's kind of like a self-preservation mechanism. It's kind of like, you know, humanity's not getting its shit together. And so there's this polarity that just starts to build. There's this rift that eventually has to come back and have it out because there's such a disconnect between the two. Why? That fear. It's that fear that drove that polarity, that drove that lack of empathy, that drove us to be blind to, you know, our neighbor's plight. And so we just keep going through these cycles of revolution, cycles of empires, cycles of all of this stupid shit, like cycles of economies, and then they fall. And right there, we're like, well, what do you do? What do we do now? And somebody says, well, let's do it again, and I'll put myself at the top. And that's happened so many times throughout our history, and it's just because both individually and collectively, we're still trying to learn this lesson, you know, but there's a lot of people who are picking it up now early, you know, starting to realize that's kind of a fucking losing game. It's kind of like going to the casino, you know, the house always wins. Whereas if you're to just recognize, you know, that study that you had mentioned earlier, that after a certain level of income, you don't get any happier. And they've proven it. They've actually done this repeatedly. I think it's about 70,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, right around there. That's like peak happiness. Anything after that, your happiness level drops. Why? More entanglements, right? And the fact that you need that additional money, those additional resources, that additional achievement, because you're lacking something. It's almost like there's a point where you're just like, yeah, I'm good. And this reflects that. And I'm going to enjoy that. And that's it. You don't need more because you're getting what you want out of life.
Yeah, and you're always just getting what you get out of life. Like, it, a lot of the struggle comes with judging our current circumstances and, you know, having this ideal version of ourselves that's further along. I think everybody deals with that on a daily basis. And it's just, the shift is just stopping taking that seriously. And just knowing that, you know, every time you've thought that in the past, that like, oh yeah, once I move to this new city, get this new job, get with this person, you know, I'll be home free. Like, I'll be happy. We always just could create this illusory like ending, and we don't really think past that. And we're just trying to get there because we aren't okay with ourselves right now. And once we get there, it never is all that we think it is. It's just reality, you know, and reality is always going to be, you know, able to be perceived positively or negatively. Like, there is gains and losses, if you want to look at it like that, with every decision and with every scenario. It's kind of just the nature of existing in like a dualistic universe. Like, if one thing is something, it can't be something else, right? If something is hot, it's not cold. And, you know, if something feels good, you know, there is that flip side, but like, we just want to believe that things are one-dimensional and that things can be simple. And it just never is. And so we just put ourselves in this like torturous hamster wheel of like chasing the fucking carrot and running from the stick, and we're just sitting there running and tiring ourselves out and driving each other further away in the process. So I think it's honestly like such a beautiful symbol that like the more that we're focused on the individuals, the more polarized and dualistic like our environment becomes. And then we're stuck with the inevitable fact that we are one and we can't separate ourselves like that. And we, like, even though we want to view each other as separate, we're obviously not. And eventually it's going to, the pendulum is going to swing back in the other direction. We're going to have to duke it out, you know, all that potential energy that's been building on either side, all the fear and emotion will come clashing in, and then there will be a rebalance of power. I mean, ideally, but you know, it's also not really worth fixating on how we're gonna fix it, because that's not really any one person's like decision. Or like, even if we want to think about how that's gonna play out, we can't know. The best we can do is like just be as sensitive and open-minded as we can, right? And kind of deal with the situations that present themselves to us in our lives in a way that is, like you said earlier, just like considering the whole. And it's not even that you're like, oh, I'm thinking about everyone. Like, it's not like that. It's just you're not thinking about yourself. And so you're doing what makes sense. And when you're acting from that perspective, it's usually what's benefiting everybody. You know, it's most informed by the collective rather than just being like, okay, what is going to get me ahead?
That's it, right? Like, it's amazing how much your decisions change when you just stop focusing on this idea of you that needs to be ahead, that needs to be in control, that needs to be more, that needs to be all these things. And all of a sudden, because it's not there, you're just like, oh, hey, are you okay? You're like, all of a sudden, you're just talking to the other people around you because you notice them finally. Not notice them as a way to perpetuate the story you tell yourself, because that's unfortunately what a lot of people see in other people. They're just playing pieces, scenery. Because they're lost in the story. And so when you run into that person, they're not talking to you. They're talking to who they need to see you as, you know, which is why it doesn't matter what you say, they're going to turn it into what they need to hear. It doesn't matter. Like, for example, the guillotine thing we were talking about earlier, most people, you know, for the most part, out of all of the people who have seen that thing, have laughed. Some people have said, that's a really good conversation starter, you know, stuff like that. Other people have just lost their shit. They've just lost their shit. This is blasphemy. This is blasphemy. This is so insulting. And it's like, no, you're just turning it into that because you're so desperate to define yourself as good. You know, because you're so desperate to see yourself as defending the right, you'll see evil everywhere. You know, and that's exactly what it is. You know, and it changes how we see everything. It's, again, confirmation bias. You know, our needs change everything we see, and we don't recognize that, which is why it's so important to be self-honest. You know, it's so important to be self-honest. Like, how much of what you're doing in your life is just the result of you not wanting to let it go? It's a good question, which isn't to imply like, yeah, I need to let everything go. That's not what I said. I'm asking you, you know, how much of your life is the result of you not wanting to let it go? And how much is it the result of you actually wanting to be there? Because there's a big difference. There's a big difference. If I was to take away all of the obligation, all of the people in your life who would think that you should be doing that thing, if I was to take away all of it, would you still do it? That's the question. It changes how you live.
That's a great question, honestly. I feel like I'm going to sit with that one after this talk for a second. Because it's interesting how much your lens sort of widens the more that you start to question things. And it's been interesting, you know, the difference in the way that I see things and I see myself. Like, even 2 years ago, I was like, what the? And not to judge that version of myself, but I was so caught up, wrapped up in myself. And we all are. Like, it's all like, we're the main character in our own story, and we can't see other people's internal experience. So for us, they're just, you know, like a NPC in our environment. And yeah, so I feel like that perspective is also reinforced, you know, by religion and the perspective that, you know, the world around you is created for you and for, you know, for humanity, but like, it's so centered on the individual that you start to see like yourself as this like special being who can kind of, you know, while following Sky Daddy's rules, like they can kind of do whatever they want. Like they can, and even sometimes the rules are able to be bent a little bit, like, you know, treat your neighbor as yourself unless they don't believe in your God, and then you can obliterate them. Like, yeah, but just back to me individually, like it's interesting, like the little gap that is created from being like, oh, but do I really know that? And it starts to get wider and wider, and I feel like I'm just perceiving so much more of what's happening by not really trying to understand what's going on most of the time, and just sort of being a part of it. And something I've been consciously doing is that, like, when I'm just out, or even when I'm like in my room, I just try and imagine that there was no actual containment to my body, you know, like I'm not separate, like really just trying to feel that. And so I'll sit there and like try and expand my awareness to like the whole room around me, and then I'm like, okay, the whole building, then see if I can feel the whole building, and then see if I can feel like the whole street. And you know, I can't guarantee that I actually can, like, not in a sense where I know what's going on down the street, but I feel this sense of just relaxation, and perceiving yourself as separate inherently makes you feel vulnerable, I think. And it feels like it's all on you to figure out your shit and to make sure that your life, you know, is worth living. But it really, like, your thoughts, your perspectives, your decisions are not just yours. Like, they really are informed by the whole of everything. And so you don't have to judge yourself for behaviors that you've been, you know, habitually repeating, or, like, you know, patterns in your relationships or things like that. Like, it goes beyond just you. And there's fucking genetic predispositions for, like, so many things, and, like, generational traumas passed down through the DNA, you know? So, like, we're just, it's like we're at the crest of the wave, you know, of evolution, and everything that's happened before is the reason that we are the way that we are, you know? And so it's not fully on us to purge that from our system or whatever, but it is our responsibility as the whole. You know, it's not that, like, oh, my life doesn't matter because I'm just this little thing. It's like, no, you're just one cell in this whole body. But if every cell saw themselves as separate and didn't work together, then we would inevitably die, right? So it's on you, but it's not. And the way that I interpret that in my day-to-day life is, like, there's no fucking point in judging yourself or judging yourself for judging yourself. You kind of just have to sit down and shut up at a certain point. Like, sit down, relax into what's already happening, and you don't have to look back in a critical way or even look at yourself right now in a critical way, because that doesn't actually change anything or do anything. Like, that's just making it harder for you to exist. Like, it's optional. And that's the thing. Like, most people don't think that self-judgment is optional because they think they need to be a good person.
You know, it's funny. It's like, who are you judging exactly? Are you judging the cell, the awareness the cell is reflecting, or the body? Which one of these things are you judging? Because you're all of them, right? I like what you were saying earlier about expanding yourself to try and feel these things, like the building, the street, so on and so forth. I do the same thing. But what's interesting is that it's changed for me over time, because it's kind of like we have a foot in both worlds. Like, you have the physical experience of being Jackie, right? But you also have the psychological experience of being the awareness of everything. And you can translate that through the physical experience of Jackie or not. And this is why when you're sitting with somebody and they're lost in thought, it's like they're not in the room. You know, or if somebody's really angry, you can feel it. If somebody's, you know, super depressed, there's a vibe there. Not when you're self-involved. You have to have a certain degree of clarity and intuition and presence and whatnot, but you can feel things like that. Why? Well, because the mind isn't separate. The body is. The body's separate. The mind is not. But let's just say that I'm all invested in my thoughts. Ray, what it means about me, all the fucking fear and need and everything that goes with that. And then you come over. And now I'm consciously aware that I'm not just Ray's thoughts, but I'm also Jackie's thoughts. Okay, so now all of a sudden, Ray's thoughts seem a lot less important, don't they? Because now they're relative to somebody else who's going through shit that's just as fucking important to them. So all of a sudden, it's just like the seriousness decreases. Now add another person. Now add another person. Now add another person. And this is the point, is that the more you are aware of being the whole, the less serious all of your individual petty shit really becomes. You really start to recognize that it's just individual petty shit. That there's a way bigger picture that's being experienced by all of you, all of us. You know, but we've had this lifetime of experiencing the physical boundaries. Like, we've grown up as a baby, bumped our arm, you know, scraped our knee, did all that, and went, okay, the barrier to me is there, right? But that's the exact same experience we have in a dream. Like, we actually bump ourselves in a dream. We walk into things. We experience other people. We touch stuff. That's not actually happening, though. Like, we're not actually in a body there, but we're experiencing the body. Why? as a point of reference against everything else. But it's still just the mind that everything in that dream is reflecting, the same mind, regardless of the experience of a body. And so that's where it's fun and kind of tricky to not get caught in one world or the other, but to recognize that you are the experience of the cell, as well as the experience of the whole body and the awareness that is reflected in both.
Yeah, it's so fucking cool when you think about it. It's dope. And I wouldn't want to not be in an individual body and have all this bullshit that I go through individually, because that also informs your empathy, you know? Like, none of the shit that we're individually worried about, like, matters when you see, like, other people are also dealing with that, and they might be suffering from, like, the opposite judgment as you. And then it's like, okay, well, you have what I want. Why are you still judging yourself? And I have what you want, and you're judging yourself. Like, you're right. It becomes so clear, like, as soon as we're able to talk about the things that we fear, that they're kind of baseless for the most part, you know, besides, like, you know, physical safety, whatever. But there's not really a point of fearing that either, because I don't know, like, you are also the whole body. Like, I'm not just Jackie, you know? So you can start to take just everything, even your physical safety, a little bit less seriously, because, like, I'm not really threatened by myself. And that's all that this external environment is. Like we have the experience of feeling separate, like you said, in a dream. And it feels just as real, but it's because all of that, you know, in our day-to-day life, our sensations, the stuff we're like taking in, is translated by our brain into our experience. It's not just like a direct reflection. And so same thing with dreams. It's just a different input. Like, it's coming from already inside our brain or whatever, our awareness. But there is no actual difference. Like, even when we're awake, it's the same sort of thing. Like, it's like we're sleepwalking. We're dreaming constantly, but we're all having this experience of dreaming at the same time. So it could be like, you know, the neurons in a brain firing together and creating this collective dream, which just is reality. But none of that would exist if we didn't.
Yeah. If you weren't here, nothing would be. But if you weren't here, I'm not here, because we're the same awareness. That's the funniest part about, like, that whole thing. It's like, if I wasn't here, nothing would be. What do you mean by I? Right? What do you mean by I? And this is what Jesus was saying in the Gospel of Thomas, when he's like, if you get this, you'll never taste death. It's the first fucking line of the Gospel. And he's just like, straight up, if you get this, death isn't a thing anymore. And it's because who's dying? Who's dying? The idea of you? Right? But that's it. It's not a matter of belief. It really is a matter of self-honesty. You know, it's a matter of understanding the you you're attached to isn't actually you. And if you can get that, if you can actually just let that go in this life, what do you have to fear? And this is why I spent a little bit of time last year. I remember walking around just reflecting on the fact that I'm already dead. Because after death, there's just more life, right? Like, that's the whole point. You don't go anywhere when you die. It's just life continuously. It's just you continuously, which means that life is death. The afterlife is life. Isn't that funny? And then people are like, oh, reincarnation. No, that's still you just wanting to hold on to the idea of you.
Yeah, life and death are just two sides of the same coin. You can't have life without death, just the same way you can't have light without dark, right? So Wow, I am already dead. Well, that's liberating. I'm like, well, I'm already dead, and doesn't really matter to me right now because I'm alive, having the experience of life right now. But regardless, you know, I'm just experiencing what I'm experiencing, and I don't need to worry. Like, I don't worry about the time before I was born. And I think it's just most people, I mean, for me, it's just, I fear the pain associated with death, but what are you going to do about that at the same time?
Associated with the dentist.
Yeah. Like, pain is just a reality of this experience. And my big thing now is like, if I can't do anything about it, why the fuck am I going to worry? Like, if I can't actually, if it's not something that like pops into my head, like, oh, I got to book a flight for this day. Okay, let me do it. Or let me figure out I'm going to do it later. You know, like, if I can't figure it out in the moment, or it's not something that I can solve at all, like, why am I going to keep feeding that fear? Like, it's not actually doing anything. And I didn't get that for most of my life. I thought actually did something. But I think that just reflects, like, when you're living more so in your mind and, like, the conceptual world that you create, like, thought seems like it has a lot more weight and impact. Because it does, honestly, over, like, your experience. But once you see thought for what it is, it just, I can very clearly see it as pointless. And whereas I used to kind of just get caught up in these spells of anxiety that would be overwhelming, like, more so now I can just fucking let it go. And I almost feel a little bit cold, like, when my friends are like telling me about shit they're worrying about, and I'm like, well, you can't do anything about it, so not really worth stressing. But I don't know. Maybe just me saying that doesn't do anything, but the fact that I do it in my day-to-day life and I'm just like, well, what am I going to do? Maybe that, you know, has more impact than anything. But yeah, you don't have to hold on to all that bullshit. Like, you're already here existing. You're already going to die. Like, you're already going to go through pain. And you already don't have control, but you've been fine this whole time. Like, you know, it's amazing. Like, you've even been able to find times to laugh and fuck off and not have any cares in the world. So you're already doing it. Just keep doing it. Just stop taking it so goddamn seriously. And yeah, the more you do, you start to find this natural flow of, like, okay, this is me acting as an individual, but kind of as the whole at the same time. Like, you start to realize where you fit in and what you can do that's fulfilling to both you, but it also is supportive and cognizant of everybody around you. And more so now, I'm looking at myself and my anxieties, and I'm like, you are holding yourself back from, like, sharing because you're afraid of judgment, but that is so fucking self-centered. That is so self-centered. And you have things that you could share that other people could benefit from, or they might be interested in hearing, and you silencing yourself.
Benefit from sharing.
Yeah, and it doesn't help anybody to stifle myself. And so that's been glaringly obvious to me recently. And yeah, when you talked about, like, you know, getting another person in the room and then hearing their perspective, it's like yours becomes less and less fucking relevant. But the more time you spend alone, or, like, you know, in your mind, you really can't see that. It's like a horse with blinders on.
You can. It just requires self-honesty. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to look at it. You have to be willing to go, am I just taking myself seriously? That's really the only question. Am I really just making this more serious than it is? Because I'm getting some juice out of it. And that's what it is. Like, self-pity fucking feels good. You know, there's a part of it that's just like, poor me. And then everybody's just going to fucking live up to that shit, you know? And there's this whole sense of entitlement. Like, why isn't everybody making me feel better? Why aren't people changing what they're doing? Blah, 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 blah. And there's a sense of control and powerlessness that go together. It's the weirdest fucking thing. But that's the point, is am I just getting caught up in myself here? And if you can do that, you're good. You know, if you can honestly just go, yeah, I'm taking this seriously. You know, like I was saying to Andrew yesterday, I had a rough night on Sunday night. And even throughout all of that, I remember laughing, going, at some point, I'm going to stop taking this so seriously. And that's what it was. It was the fact that I was just caught in a loop of reacting to things that I had invested in as being serious and was still going through the habit. Right. And that's it. And it's just recognizing that I'm taking myself seriously. And that's the most bitter pill to swallow when you want to be a victim. You know, when you want to bitch about life and pity yourself, admitting that you're just taking shit too seriously is the last thing you want to do. Which is why it's so important. It's so powerful. It really can just let you free, because that's the point in all of this. It's not a trajectory. It's not a path out of your mind. It's a choice. Now. Now. Always now. Always now. And if you're like, well, I get caught back in my mind, that's great. What are you doing right now? You know, and then later on, when you're caught back up in your mind, ask yourself, what are you doing right now? And that's the point. It's not to get to a place where you never get caught up in your mind. It's to be aware of your mind here and now. All right. And that's it. And that's living in both worlds. You know, and there's a degree of freedom and responsibility and again, expression and creativity there. But that's the point. Be willing to just be yourself. Let go of that idea of groupthink, that you're going to be safe if everybody like approves of you, if you don't rattle anyone's cages, if you don't, you know, rock any boats. Like, let go of that idea of being the good person in society. And what you will become is a person. You know, what you will express is your humanity, what it is to be here, existence as a whole. And every single person who's ever pushed the boundaries of what society has become comfortable with has had to step outside the lines of being approved, of being looked at positively. They've had to do that. They've had to make it more about what was important to them than how they were perceived. Super important. That said, though, we are coming up to the hour mark. So I vote that we're going to end this episode here-ish, because we could just keep rambling. But at the moment, we still don't know what the fucking title of this episode is going to be, or this series. So again, if you're watching and you would like to help us decide what to entitle this, go to patreon.com/dualisticunity. There's a post from yesterday asking for a title. Drop it in the comment section, and we appreciate all of your suggestions. Jackie, I'm fucking stoked for this series. This has been a lot of fun. Like, we have so much ground to cover. There's so many things to talk about. This is going to be a lot of fun. And thanks to everybody who can join us in the comment section.
Yeah, this has been a blast. Yeah, I look forward to doing more of these every 2 weeks. Let us know any thoughts. I feel like DU Rambles is pretty apt. yeah, I like it. But, you know, if anything else, you know, happens to appear and seems more fitting, we'll go with that. But yeah, thanks for watching, you guys. It's been a great chat. Lots to stew on. I'm gonna like sit down and journal for a second and be like, if all the obligation was gone, what would you be doing? Because I maybe have been in a cycle of taking myself too goddamn seriously, and yeah, but no judging that either. It's all good, you know. It's gonna keep happening forever, but I'm gonna keep being self-honest the whole time. And yeah. Cool.
Just go through the cycles. Before we wrap up, I just want to make another announcement. May 18th, Jackie is going to be teaching some yoga on our Patreon page. So if you would like to participate in Jackie's yoga class, go to Patreon. Check that shit out. It's only $5 a month, and there's a free trial. And I just want to take a moment to thank you, Jackie. I really appreciate all the times that you've been there in our groups, all the work you've done in your own life, just your ability and your willingness to be self-honest and you know, express yourself when you're going through shit. You know, if you're frustrated or if you're feeling down, if you're feeling happy or if you're feeling cocky, whatever it is, you show up and you be you, and it's very much appreciated. I know we spoke months ago, and I had invited you to come onto the podcast as a co-host, and ever since I've been loving everything that you've been doing. And so I just wanted to give a shout out to Jackie. If you aren't following her on Instagram or TikTok yet, definitely fucking get on that and definitely check out her yoga class as well. We're also going to be doing other yoga stuff, people. There's going to be stuff available for download on the website. There's all kinds of shit coming, as well as her series with Andrew. So keep an eye out for that. But yep. I'm done rambling now, everyone.
All right, yeah, check out the yoga classes. I'm gonna be recording another yoga flow with Andrew tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. And yeah, we'll talk soon, you guys, and thank you, Ray, for just being you and doing your thing.
I knew you'd do that.